Hello, and welcome to The Price of Music, the show that looks at the money behind the music industry, with me, Stuart Dredge, and Steve Lamack. Steve isn't here today, he's travelling back from South by Southwest, and we're going to catch up about that in the show later this week, but I'm really excited today, because we have an interview with Sam Dubof. Now, Sam is Global Head of Spotify for Artists Marketing and Policy Team, and what we're talking about is Spotify's annual update to its Loud and Clear report. So that's a feast of streaming stats talking about how much money they're paying out, how it's divided, who's earning what, and the trends. So I talked to Sam about what the report is and what it tells us about the streaming economy and how artists get paid. Okay, so I'm really pleased to be here with Sam Dubof from Spotify. And we're going to talk about the Loud and Clear report. We're going to talk about some of the figures and stats, and we're going to look at kind of some of the trends around that. But I guess a good place to start might be to talk about, well, first talk about what you do at Spotify, and then maybe let's start with some background about Loud and Clear, because a lot of people listening might not be aware of it before.
Sure. Thanks so much for having me. I work on our Spotify for Artists team. So hopefully your listeners are familiar with Spotify for Artists. It's used by over a million artists, managers, and labels every month. It's kind of the gateway to the Spotify experience for the artist side. So my team works on helping to build and launch all those products, as well as our kind of music marketing and policy overall, helping to build great opportunities for artists, which we're here to talk about today.
And I mean, I remember Loud and Clear, I'm trying to think how many years ago it first started, but it's been going for a few years, isn't it? But maybe just talk about what Loud and Clear is, why we're talking today, and kind of what it does for Spotify.
Yeah, fundamentally, we believe artists deserve clarity about the economics of music streaming. The industry has been opaque for some time. Publications like yours help try to clarify things for artists, but the streaming model added a lot of complexity. And we're trying to do our part to add as much transparency as we can. With Loud and Clear, we're trying to talk about the quiet parts out loud so people and artists understand how payments work, where the money's going, who all is involved. This is our fourth annual Loud and Clear report. We publish a bunch of new data every March with another full year of royalty data from Spotify. As of today, the site now includes 2023 royalty data. We have top 10 takeaways at the top of the site. I know I'll talk through a few of those today. And then there's a bunch more data on the site. You can click revenue thresholds from $1,000 through to $10 million per year, see exactly how many artists are generating that amount. There's educational resources to understand how streaming royalties work. And then there's a few dozen FAQ. In our Your Questions Answered section, we try to take on the most kind of frequent questions we get from artists and answer them as directly as we can. Today's an exciting day for us. Internally, we're always really proud to publish Loud and Clear. It really gets to the core of why we all come to work every day to build opportunities for artists. And we're 4 years in, and we're still the only streaming service that publishes detailed data on total payouts and how much artists are generating. And we're really proud to lead the industry in that way.
Mm. I mean, it's certainly, speaking for me, it's kind of this is not meant to sound offensive, but it's kind of a nerd's paradise. If you're interested in where the money goes, how it's divided, who's earning it, what the trends are. And I know even people who've criticized Spotify respect the fact, I think, that you put those figures out there and you put this stuff out to be discussed. Like, it has sparked a lot of debate, I think, in the industry about what it means and where it's going. So yeah, it's a big moment every year now, isn't it? I guess it's always feel like it's becoming more a big deal. Like, the release is something people are waiting for so they can see what those latest stats are.
I'm glad to hear. Yeah, I'm a nerd about these things too, so glad you feel the same way. It's definitely been building year over year, and I think, especially given the complexities of streaming, just transparency about how much artists are generating, where the money is going, breaking down the numbers, kind of feels like table stakes for what we need to move industry conversation forward. So that's really our goal here.
Well, I mean, we got this brilliant email ahead of this talk about, I think, the 10 takeaways from the site, and it's just a feast of stats. But I guess we should start with the biggest one, which is, I think, and we reported on this recently, the $9 billion of payouts in 2023. And I believe the report is, you're kind of breaking that down a bit more, aren't you, and saying how it's growing year on year. But should we talk about that big figure yet, and how is that growing in terms of the money you're paying out?
Yeah. A fun part of publishing the report every year is the numbers getting bigger every year and tracking that growth. For another year in 2023, Spotify set the record for the highest annual payment to the music industry from any single retailer in one year. That's over $9 billion, as you mentioned, and that's nearly tripled over the past 6 years. So we paid out a little bit over $3 billion in 2017. That's the first year our data is available. So, you know, we're tracking from $3 billion 6 years ago to over $9 billion last year. Really solid growth. And I think especially this year, we've been thinking a bit back to the last decade or two in the music industry. You know, you think back 20 years ago, as your listeners know well, the industry was completely blindsided and ravaged by piracy. And this year, we're, you know, exactly a decade, 10 years from when the industry hit rock bottom in 2014, a year when the future was unclear and some were wondering whether the streaming model would be an experiment or if it could create a better future for artists. And 2014 doesn't seem that long ago to me, but, it's crazy to realize then digital download and CDs still made up 75% of industry revenue. Streaming was in its infancy, and there wasn't a lot of revenue to go around. Spotify was pretty small, paying out like $700 million at the time compared to, $9 billion last year. So when we look at this year's report today, we're kind of thinking about it as representing exactly a decade since the industry low point. And 10 years later, there's an entirely new ecosystem here powered by streaming, and it's really exciting to see.
I did see someone yesterday speculating that CDs are going to make a comeback as a retro format, and that made me feel incredibly old.
Yeah, that depresses me a bit, but I wouldn't be surprised.
No. So one of the things I always find interesting is the breakdown of this money in Loud and Clear. And I think one of the things you do is you divide artists into tiers in terms of the payouts they're earning. So I think it's like more than $10,000 a year, more than $100,000, $1 million. So can we talk about that, I suppose, about what the trends are in terms of those tiers? Because I know that the thing about the price of music is we do talk about the biggest artists and how much money they might be making, but it's as important and interesting to talk about how the artists lower down that pyramid are kind of increasing and how they're kind of making money.
Yeah.
So what can you say about the breakdown there?
Yeah, I think I'm glad you asked the question because I know for me, the $9 billion number or some of the kind of big top line numbers, they're important to share. It's important data to have out there, but it's kind of hard to really put that amount of money in context. And the artist revenue thresholds are definitely the heart of Loud and Clear because it's breaking down that $9 billion Spotify's paying out and trying to contextualize what that means for artist opportunity and at the artist level. On the site, you can click through a bunch of levels from $1,000 a year through to $10 million a year. And at every level, the number of artists generating that amount has tripled or nearly tripled, which is amazing to see. And three of the kind of representative levels we spotlight in our top takeaways are $10,000, $100,000, and $1 million per year, spans the spectrum a bit. And you see at the $10,000 level, just 23,000 artists were generating at least $10,000 on Spotify in 2017. Last year, that grew to 66,000. At the $100,000 level, it's grown from 4,300 6 years ago to 11,600, so solidly in the five digits now. And for artists generating more than $1 million, which, means they're probably generating more than $4 million or more from all recorded revenue sources. We were under 500 in 2017, and last year, 1,250 artists generated $1 million. So would encourage your listeners to check out the site, click through all the revenue thresholds. There's some interesting trends to look at across the board. It's the first year ever that more than 250,000 artists generated at least $1,000 per year. And it's also the first time over 50 artists generated 10 million or more, jumping from only 10 artists 6 years ago to 60 last year. So across the kind of artist spectrum, some really cool trends to dig into.
It's fun at the big end, trying to think, who are those artists? I'm always like, well, I'm going to try and guess who are the 50 making $10 million. But it's all, that's one of the important things. It's all anonymous, isn't it? You're not saying this specific artist earns this much money. It's all very much.
That's right. Luggage. Yeah. I think a lot of the levels just kind of give you a rule of thumb to kind of start to understand the revenue opportunity on Spotify. So yeah, it was 60 artists last year who generated at least $10 million. The first time it was over 50, and it's solidly over 50. And so, yeah, as a rule of thumb, if you're thinking about the biggest global superstars, you know, the ones making headlines on your site every week, they're probably generating $10 million or more just from Spotify alone. So yeah, sharing numbers like this help kind of create those frameworks so people can understand what the Spotify opportunity might be for a massive artist.
I was going to get into, I suppose, one of the interesting things about this is there's two things to say about this money. So I guess one, and I think you've referred to that so far, is the fact that Spotify isn't the only streaming service or the only music income. So there's a multiplication thing that happens here where you say, well, if they're earning $1 million from Spotify, it could be $4 million overall. And then the other side of that is this is payouts, isn't it? I think it's one thing that the listeners are very interested in. This is what you're paying out. It's not necessarily what gets to the artist and the songwriters at the end, because that will depend on what happens next. So there's those, I guess there's those two moderations to what the payouts figure is to understand how much it will actually be earning.
That's right. Yeah, loud and clear. The goal isn't just to frame the industry conversation around Spotify. We're just trying to share the data we have access to contribute to an understanding of the overall revenue and career opportunity for artists and rights holders. So based on industry reports and the data we see, Spotify represents about 20 to 25% of global recorded revenue. So across the site, we'll share how much artists are making on Spotify alone, but we'll multiply the number by four, which feels conservative given, you know, 20 to 25%, 25% on the high end. So when we're talking about artists generating $10,000 plus a year on Spotify, that likely means, you know, $40,000 plus a year across all streaming services, vinyl, CD, all those recorded revenue sources. And of course, that multiplier doesn't include, concert revenue, merch revenue, brand deals, and so on. So yeah, Spotify is a meaningful part of the equation for how artists build their career financially, but just one part of the equation. And definitely on the second point, we're sharing the data we have access to, which is what we're paying out. And I know you know, but Spotify and other streaming services do not pay artists or songwriters directly. We're paying rights holders, you know, the labels and publishers and distributors and PROs and all that complexity we talked about earlier. And so we really only know our side of the equation, the money generated that we pay out. And of course, from there, it'll depend on artists and songwriters and the deals and agreements they've made based on their contract. For some, that's the lion's share of the money generated. For others, they may have steeper advances and taken that approach that works best for them. So that's all the data kind of we have, and we share our part of the equation, and artists and songwriters will know their agreements from there.
It's one of my pet bugbears when you see reports saying Ed Sheeran and Blur from Spotify last year, and you know that's just a timesing his streams by a per stream rate without taking into account any of those deals or middle stuff. So yeah, hopefully people listening to this will now be able to interpret that and look at the figures and go, right, okay, but there's more to this outside that. One, you mentioned merch and tickets there, and that's one of the things that's quite interesting, because I don't know how much of that is in Loud and Clear this year, but you've been doing more and more around that as well, in terms of not kind of selling it necessarily yourself, but helping artists do that. Is that part of this picture too, that you're trying to kind of increase or kind of gives artists support in the way they make money from stuff that isn't Spotify and isn't streaming?
Yeah, all the data on the site is strictly just streaming royalties. That's all the figures represent, but definitely big picture, we're investing a lot in that space, concert and ticket sales and merch, because we know how critical those revenue streams are to artists in the music industry. And we think Spotify is uniquely positioned to help grow those businesses for artists. And we're really talking about two things with our strategy there. Spotify's ability to reach the right fans, knowing who your biggest music fans are, likely to go to your shows, and then to reach them at the right moment, right when they've listened to your music or right when they're falling in love with your sound. So we've built a bunch of features the last few years on that front. The table stakes, we just rolled out a new design for artist profiles on Spotify, where now there's a dedicated tab for concerts and a dedicated tab for merch. So easy one-stop spot for fans to explore where they can see you live and buy a t-shirt or vinyl or whatnot. But beyond that, the real magic of what we're trying to build is all the other places across the Spotify ecosystem that we're merchandising these items. And so if, you know, there's the personalized merch and live events feed where we'll show you, you know, recommend merch and local concerts to people based on their listing history, which is always a really powerful surface. And you find merch and concert listings on album and release pages, email and home screen recommendations, even what we call the now playing view, the kind of screen you see when you're playing a song. So right when you're, you know, loving a song you're listening to, you can scroll down and shop the merch or see a show that's only a few blocks away. So when we look at the full picture of how Spotify is powering an artist's business, we definitely know a lot of the discovery of artists happens on Spotify. And then you kind of go and buy concert tickets separately or buy merch or go follow them on social. And Spotify does that indirectly. And more we're doing that directly too by featuring those things right on our platform.
Mm. And this is a bit of a tangent from this, maybe not. Like, I feel like a lot of the music industry stuff I've been to recently, conferences and articles and reading, people are talking about the idea of those keenest fans that you mentioned there, like having your keenest fans who want to buy stuff from you, who love you so much. And that feels like a big trend this year. Labels seem to be talking about it a lot more, managers talking about it. So is that something that's also on a Spotify agenda, thinking about, well, people who really love someone, yes, they're buying a subscription and those royalties will go to the artist, but it's also on the agenda to kind of try and help artists tap into that. Well, who loves me so much, they will want to buy a t-shirt, they will want to come and see me.
Yeah, the biggest music fans are on Spotify. So tools to help artists engage with their super fans are core to our platform, core to what we've been building in Spotify for Artists for years now. That's beginning with the data. Last year, we rolled out a new segments section in Spotify for Artists. So artists can track their super listeners every day. Typically, only 2% of an artist's listeners qualify as a super listener based on our methodology, but they drive nearly 20% of monthly streams and over half of merch purchases on Spotify. So when it comes to an artist's revenue overall on Spotify, cultivating these super listeners are a key part of the equation. So that data is just the foundation. We can uniquely help artists see how many super listeners they have who are streaming them over and over. And a lot of our features are focused on super fan communities. Our Fans First program for years now has let artists send exclusive offers by email to their biggest listeners, limited edition merch or an exclusive presale window on tickets. And another super fan product we've been rolling out are called Countdown Pages, which are pre-release pages for albums where artists can kind of build hype for their new album with super fans. They can watch video teasers from artists, pre-save, get ready to stream during release day or week one. So you definitely can expect to see us doing even more in the space this year and beyond.
Mm. I had a fan's first email from the Black Crowes today. I was very impressed.
Did you buy it?
I qualified. Do you know, I'm such a super fan. I already had tickets for the concert because there was a fan mail out. But I appreciated the I appreciate the fact that I'm pinging that data thing in the algorithm that it knows.
Good. I'm glad we got our targeting right, at least.
One of the other big stats in this update that I'm interested in is about this idea, I think this is maybe something that you haven't covered so much before, is artists from countries where English isn't the first language and how well they're doing. And that seems to be one of the other big trends of the year. But what have you seen in your data about, I guess you call them non-Anglo artists or artists who are not from the US and UK and those traditional markets?
Yeah, that's probably my favorite insight this year. It's a new data point we haven't shared before. And it's really awesome to see. We focused on the 66,000 artists who generated at least $10,000 from Spotify last year. Again, that's likely 40,000 or more across all recorded revenue. And more than half of those artists are from countries where English is not the primary language. And it really shows the power of an increasingly global music culture. And in some ways, part of this story is old news. At this point, everybody knows streaming has brought down the barriers to releasing music, and fans' taste has expanded as they've gotten access to different types of music. And you've written lots about K-pop and Latin music and Amapiano and Afrobeats. And I think what's new about this data that's exciting to see is we're seeing these trends that we talk about at the music culture level result in financial opportunity for these global artists too. And streaming better reflects now the true global world we live in today. The industry was very much once dominated by artists just from a few markets because that's where the deepest pockets in the music industry were headquartered. It cost a lot of money to produce, ship, and market CDs globally. And with the growing freedom of choice and the lower barriers to entry, fans' tastes have shifted. The world's more interconnected. And this year's data really shows that. So I think we'll see this trend continue. It's a really exciting one.
Mm. And I was fascinated reading the list because I obviously it's Spanish, which is all those Latin American artists included. And there's Korean, K-pop. I think there's several Indian languages, and that shows how streaming is growing there. And then Greek. And I was like, wow, what's happening in Greece? I had no idea that that was a big growth market of local music. So there's stuff there that's like really kind of interesting insights that haven't been talked about even much in the industry.
Yes, Spanish, German, Portuguese, French, and Korean were the top five in terms of performance. And then Hindi, Indonesian, Punjabi, Tamil, and Greek all saw huge growth upticks in 2023. So we tried to break down the biggest languages in terms of how many artists are generating 10K or more, and then the ones where we're seeing a lot of growth. And yeah, look forward to digging into the Greek music scene. I didn't know much about that either.
I feel like if anyone listening knows, because I don't know what's happening in Greece, whether it's, because I know some of these things, like I know in Germany, for example, there's a really strong local hip hop scene. That's what's driving it. And obviously K-pop we know about. Like, I'm always fascinated to know what the things are. So yeah, if anyone's listening and knows what's happening in Greece, kind of drop us a line, because it sounds like it might be an interesting story there.
Yeah, send us a playlist link. We need it.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing I think you're talking about, and we've already talked about this on the podcast, I think, is this idea that getting back to those $9 billion of payouts, the fact that half of them were generated by independent artists and labels. And that feels like an interesting moment, but I'm not entirely sure what it means. Like, I've got several conflicting thoughts in my mind. So from your standpoint, what are you seeing in terms of the independent artists and labels and what that says about the streaming economy and what's happening on Spotify?
Ultimately, I think it really just shows artists have more choice than ever about how they navigate their career. It's reflective of how streaming's leveled the playing field for how an artist can get their music into the world, especially as the cost of producing and releasing music's become more affordable. We've seen independent artists now being able to access the same global audience and resources as the superstars. So yeah, we shared this data point a few weeks ago that for the first time, first year ever, nearly half of the revenue paid out to the music industry by Spotify was accounted for by independent artists and labels, which was a 4x increase from what indies generated from Spotify in 2017. And ultimately, I think it just shows what a powerful time for artists this is, because there's so many different options for how to build a career. Each has their own benefits, services, or trade-offs. And It's really about opportunity. The major label route certainly offers so much opportunity in the form of investment and marketing and promotion and more. But this data point, nearly $4.5 billion generated by the indies, that kind of speaks to, you know, I see comments online a lot about how all the payouts just go to the stars. And I think we've actually, seen in the data, the opposite's true. The industry's never been less top heavy than it is now. So we were excited to share that data point and helps frame up for artists the different paths and opportunities they have for how to navigate their career.
And it's so, and I may have got this wrong, but I think earlier on you said that, that Spotify's payouts have tripled since 2017. Is that right?
That's right.
And indie payouts have quadrupled. So they're not only big, but they're growing faster than the overall payouts, I guess, which suggests that, that the share of indies has been increasing, which if you're an independent is quite exciting, I guess.
Yeah, really exciting time for independent artists. And one of the other top takeaways we share for the first time is looking a bit at artists at the career level, kind of more longitudinal data year over year, now that we've been doing this for a few years. And one of the fears about streaming, especially for independent artists, was would streaming, as playlisting became the predominant, format, would the model just reward viral songs and, one-hit wonders rather than helping artists build a career? And the data really shows that fear hasn't come to fruition. So we looked at all the artists who generated at least $10,000 or more in 2017, 6 years ago. Last year in 2023, 4 in 5 of them are still generating at least $10,000, and nearly half of them are now generating $50,000 or more. So we're seeing artists being able to build sustainable fan bases, sustained careers year over year, which is a really powerful way to look at this data, because you might think it's a complete new set of artists every year who might have a big hit song that gets on a big playlist, and then they're having to rebuild that from scratch the next year. We're really seeing the same artists carry over this revenue opportunity year over year and build that career opportunity, which our platform's really focused on trying to enable.
Okay. I mean, this is maybe one of those bigger industry topics rather than a Spotify only thing. But one of the things we've been talking about in the podcast recently is the fact that this year we're seeing some changes to the model of streaming payouts, and people starting to say, right, we need to change the way we pay the money, divide it. And one of the trends I'm seeing is that independent labels are worried that they're not going to get much of a say in that. A lot of it seems to be driven by, for example, major labels. But when I saw this stat, it made me think, well, actually, if indies are half the payouts, they should also have a strong voice in how the models change. I mean, I don't know if there's anything you could speak to that in terms of how Spotify sees this, but does this show, I suppose, that indies are important, should have a say in how this model carries on evolving and what changes we make to it?
Yeah, when we talk about big music policy, strategy, the sorts of things my team's working on, we've always taken great care to partner across the whole industry ecosystem. So we're talking to artist distributors and independent labels, major labels, label distributors, and artists and their teams themselves. That's an absolute necessity. Getting industry consensus is not always easy. It's famously difficult in the music industry, but for any change we've been making, we always take care to make sure all our stakeholders get a voice in those changes. And that's really important to us, and definitely is the way we've been operating and will continue to.
Okay. So one of the stats I found most interesting, and I think this first was put in the report maybe a year ago or 2 years ago, is this idea of there's how many people are uploading stuff to Spotify, but then narrowing down to, well, how many of those are trying to make a living from music? I think the phrase this year is emerging and professional artists. Is that correct?
That's right.
So let's talk about that, because I think you've put a number on that, and that seems like an interesting thing to say. Well, how many people are trying to make a living from music? So what is that number, and how is that changing, and what percentage of all the people who upload to Spotify is that?
The hope with our Loud and Clear report is to help create transparency and context around the numbers you're seeing. And one of the big questions is kind of, what's the denominator when you're talking about how many artists are generating money and you're looking at not just Loud and Clear, but any industry report, you kind of want to divide that number by how many artists are trying to make a career in music. And it can be difficult to know that number. And so instead, you'll see people talk about just how many people are uploading music to streaming services. And more people can make music in an affordable way now. You can release it for pretty cheap globally through distributors, and all that's awesome to see. But of course, we know there's a big difference between people who share a few tracks online as a hobby versus artists who are working tirelessly to make a career off their art. So we took our best estimate. I'd love to hear other industry voices share what they're seeing in their data. We think there's about 225,000 artists we call emerging and professional. You hear a lot about the over 10 million artists who are, you know, quote unquote, on Spotify. Those 10 million are just people who have uploaded at least one track. So one of the data points we shared today is more than 8 million of those people have released fewer than 10 tracks all time. So when you think about that, I think it's, you know, reasonable to assume those aren't yet career artists trying to build a career in music. Maybe they're just early in their career and they'll be releasing more. Maybe they're a hobbyist and just wanted to share their music with the world. You can kind of think of it akin to, you know, if someone uploaded a single YouTube video or a few YouTube videos to share with family and friends, that doesn't mean they're trying to be a professional creator. In the same way, uploading a single track to streaming services doesn't mean you're, you know, an aspiring professional music artist. So to get to that 225,000 number, we think it's a kind of reasonable denominator for thinking about how many artists are really making a go for it. We look at some on-platform data. So that's about how many artists have released at least 10 songs all time. So they have some body of work. And average at least 10,000 monthly listeners, which means they've been able to find at least an initial fan base out of the, you know, 600 million plus on Spotify. We also look at off-platform data. So across all of the concert listing sites, all the popular ones that artists use, there's about the same number of artists, 225,000, who have at least one ticketed event last year. In-person event, a digital event, suggesting some commercial activity, trying to build that career in music. And so the on-platform data, the off-platform data centers around that 225,000 number. It was closer to 200,000 last year, so a bit of growth there, which is awesome to see. And so we try to share that number, to help people put some of the artist generation numbers in context, and shift the conversation away from how many people have uploaded music to how many people are really trying to make it their career.
I quite enjoyed, I think the CEO, Daniel Ek, did this recently in a video, didn't he? The comparison to football. Because speaking as someone, I'm 47, but I've only relatively recently accepted that I couldn't do a job for some team somewhere in a professional level. But there is that, so it is interesting, I think, when people are measuring that, who does something versus who is trying to make a living from it. And it's, so there isn't just music. You've looked at football parallels and other industries, and I think YouTube is mentioned too, this idea that tens of millions of people uploading videos to YouTube, but how many of them are making money? So I guess it's kind of, I guess it's a creative economy, isn't it? Figuring out, well, who is, like you said, who is trying or who is very early and has more to do, you know, is more to come.
Yeah, that's just right.
Grant. Well, I mean, this segues neatly into the changes you're making, I suppose, to your payouts. And we talked about this on a podcast fairly recently. So thankfully, you don't have to explain them all in full again. But one of those changes was about the fact that I think it was tracks with, correct me if I'm wrong, fewer than 1,000 streams in the past year, when you have to get to that 1,000 stream threshold to start earning royalties. Is that about redirecting money then to this group of 225,000 emerging and professional artists? Is that kind of the motivation here? I mean, behind saying, right, this is how we're going to change what kind of music we pay and what the threshold it has to reach is?
Yeah, that's exactly right. We all of our new policies are focused on better supporting those most dependent on streaming revenue, those emerging and professional artists. We introduced a few new policies that we'll be implementing this year, some policies to help stamp out artificial streaming, policies around undifferentiated and short noise recordings that have increased in frequency on streaming services, and then a policy focused on these disregarded micropayments generated by an increasingly long tail set of tracks. And when we look at all those policies together, by our estimates, we'll be able to redirect nearly $1 billion over the next 5 years back to those emerging and professional artists, which is awesome to see. I think back in the early days of streaming, you know, in 2014, when Spotify wasn't even paying out $1 billion a year to the music industry, it was easy to look at these sorts of inefficiencies or perverse incentives in the royalty system. If they only impact, you know, a percentage point or half a percentage point of the royalty pool, we kind of could just say the impact isn't material. Let's just focus on growth, which is largely what we've done the last decade. But as we started to reach this tipping point where we're paying out, you know, $9 billion last year and growing, these kind of questions that impact, you know, just a percentage or so of the royalty pool means tens of millions of dollars a year that could be increasing these loud and clear numbers, helping emerging professional artists who are counting on it earn even more. And yeah, that's really the kind of spirit and hope behind the new track minimum policy you mentioned. As you know, Spotify makes no additional money from this model in any way. So it's really just about the fairest and most rewarding way for that same sized royalty pool to be allocated.
Okay. And one thing I've been thinking about a bit is sort of a couple of the criticisms I've heard. One was from people, I suppose, worrying that bands who are very artists who are just starting out, it might be demoralizing if they don't reach that threshold quickly. But the other thing, we had actually a listener write in recently who was, I think they would fall into that category you mentioned of being, they're a hobbyist. They make their music and they put it online because they can and they want, you know, that's the achievement. But he said basically that he still feels like if his music is generating streams, he should still have the right to be paid for it, even if it's tiny. So I was wondering how you're feeling about those arguments in terms of people saying, well, if people are listening to our music in a tiny way and it's a tiny amount of money, it's still something I've earned. But also the other side of the people who are just starting out, they've put their first track on, they are trying to make it, but they're early. Are you seeing any kind of pushback, or how are you thinking about the kind of people who've been saying, we're a bit worried about there being thresholds of earnings here?
I definitely understand that perspective, and it's important to us. We've tried to set the threshold as low as possible, as accessible as possible. You know, tens of millions of tracks are reaching 1,000 annual streams each year. Anyone who distributes music to Spotify is eligible to generate royalties the same way with every song they release if they can reach that initial audience. And, you know, our role here is to try to look at the ecosystem overall and the data overall, and try to see what can help the most money reach the artists who are counting on it most. So yeah, when you look at the scale of just how many tracks are on Spotify and all streaming services, with more and more getting released every year, there is now this population of tens of millions of tracks that generate 3 cents per month on average. And most distributors, understandably, given costs associated with paying out money, they have minimums, they charge banking fees for artists to withdraw the money, usually at least a few dollars per withdrawal, and sometimes much more, especially outside the US where a lot of our payments go. So we've heard from distributors, and we know a lot of these 3 cent monthly payments are just sitting in accounts disregarded, and instead they could be reaching those emerging artists. And 99.5% of streams on Spotify are of tracks that will be eligible in this new policy. But when you think about that half a percentage point of streams on Spotify, that now means, you know, $40 million or so per year and growing. So again, you know, we're not making any additional money from this policy. When we look at that $40 million a year, it can go to increase the payments to all the eligible songs, earning more material amounts, or it could be spread out in these 3-cent payments that we know often aren't reaching artists at all, even though sometimes they are, like some of the examples you mentioned. So we're trying to look at it at the ecosystem level and where can that money be the most impactful. Hopefully when we're sharing next year's Loud and Clear numbers, some of that will start to manifest.
And it is interesting, I think, that idea, because I think maybe this is the point we've got to in streaming where a lot of artists do worry that any change there's going to be will mean the rich will get richer, whether that's major labels or the biggest artists, the kind of Drakes and Taylor Swifts, and that any change will mean that the smaller artists will suffer or get poorer. But it sounds like you're talking about this idea of when you talk about an ecosystem and emerging artists, so that is still the core of this. It's not just about making a change and Taylor Swift has another speedboat, whatever she spends the money on. You don't have to speculate on that.
Yeah, that's been part of our process of talking to all industry stakeholders we can over the past months and getting ready to roll this out. And it's at the core of the Loud and Clear data we share. As you mentioned earlier, you know, there's one world where we could do a report like this and just share the $1 million artists or, you know, just the high end of the spectrum. The story of streaming and of Spotify very much is about democratizing opportunity and access. And, you know, now seeing 250,000 artists generate 1,000 or more per year, over 100,000 artists generating 5,000 or more, 66,000 artists generating 10,000 or more. Those numbers are really exciting because that's the kind of revenue that gives artists belief they can build a career in music and they can fund their production and they can kind of stay in the game and continue to build their career through any kind of path and opportunity they choose to. So that's been our focus with all our policies. We've been trying to really focus on helping that ecosystem as a whole. It's very much not about helping the biggest artists. It's about looking at that overall ecosystem and how many emerging artists can we benefit? How can we make sure as much money as possible is reaching that emerging and professional set?
Talking of listeners, we did, and we can finish off with it. We've got a couple of listener questions. We did ask them what they'd like to ask you. Here's one from Richard Bowes, Richard, if I got that wrong, who said, it's well known that artists get a meager amount from music streaming, and we know that money is tight at the moment. But given how frequently TV and film streaming services increase their prices, why has Spotify only made one slight increase to their individual plan in well over 10 years? And he went on to say, given that Spotify invests in a number of other areas, a small increase with the extra pound going directly to the artists would likely be easily accepted in a much less competitive market than films. And also do wonders for PR, which I feel like there's two questions in that. One is kind of price rises and what Spotify's plans are. But that idea of the extra pound going directly to artists, which sounds to me like it could be a recipe for lots of arguments in the industry, but from a fan's point of view, might sound cool. So yeah, what can you say about what's happened already with price increases and what scope you see for people, those of us who listen to Spotify, to pay a bit more and for that to go to the artists we love?
Yeah, the pricing side really isn't my area of expertise. I'm more focused just on the artist side, but I think how we think about it is, of course, incentives are quite aligned here. Spotify makes money when artists make money. For every dollar for music we generate, and I know it's the same for other streaming services, the vast majority goes back to the music industry. So these incentives are aligned. We all want to find a price that maximizes revenue. And if you charge too much, you trade off how many subscribers will sign up. And if you charge too little, you're leaving money on the table. I know we've been kind of talking today about the industry of 10, 20 years ago versus now, and the average adult spending money on music today is spending nearly double compared to during the peak of the CD era in 1999. And there's millions more people spending when you think about, you know, the cost of a subscription over a full year now. Definitely no price increases are going to be an important part of industry growth. The cost of Spotify varies across regions. We've made a number of price increases in different markets around the world over the past 2 years, I think over 100 the last couple of years. And we did raise prices halfway through last year in some of our biggest markets. So I'm sure it's something we'll continue to look at.
Okay. And in a series of listener questions about things that quite possibly aren't your role, unless you are the Neil Young liaison at Spotify, which is possible. We had a question about the story last week about Neil Young returning to Spotify. So he took his music off a couple of years ago because he didn't like some of the COVID stuff on Joe Rogan's podcast. He's returned it, but he wrote this letter saying, "I'm returning to Spotify, but what I'd love is for them to do high-res music," which I know is something that was announced a few years ago, hasn't quite appeared yet. I'm guessing you're not going to come on here and say, well, I'll announce it again. But this is something we hear about artists talking about. One thing they would like is in terms of the quality of music and that to improve. So what can you say about what's been happening at Spotify, what might happen there? And can you give Neil Young any throw him a bone at all?
Well, I can say personally, I'm glad to have Neil's music back on Spotify. That part's really exciting. I don't have anything more to share on Hi-Fi. As you said, not the part of the company I work on. So sadly, no news to share today. But I definitely see all the online comments. So I know the passion for it.
Right, thanks. Well, I mean, I think that's all the questions, but it's going to be really interesting. I think you mentioned this idea of people can go and see it, and that's one of the good things about Loud and Clear is it's not just something that people in the industry see, it's something that anyone can go and visit. So it's when we come out, I believe it will be live, so people can just go on there and dig away. Is that correct?
Yeah, spotify.com/loudandclear should take you there, and updated today with all the 2023 data. You can see the top 10 takeaways, and then scroll down to those FAQ I talked about, click on every revenue threshold and see how many artists have been generating that amount each year. So I hope folks take the time and let us know what other kind of features they'd want to see, what other kind of information we could provide.
Yeah, and definitely anyone who goes in there and finds something interesting, write to us too. We'll have the address in a bit because there's so much data there. The stuff we've talked about is kind of the top level, but I'm sure there's some more nuggets to be dug out. So look, thank you very much for your time today. And thank you for kind of sparing some talk to us about the report before it comes out. And good luck with it. And talk again soon, hopefully.
Of course. Thanks so much for the fun conversation. I'll talk to you soon.
So that was Sam Dubroff from Spotify. Thanks to him for talking and thanks to you for listening. And if you've enjoyed the show, please do subscribe in your podcast app. Give us a review, give us a rating, tell a couple of friends about it. And if you've got a question you'd like answered, whether it's from today's episode or anything else about the music industry and its finances, you can email us at theprice of music podcast@gmail.com. Until next episode, cheers.